This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A memorial service is being held this week in Kalamazoo for the Reverend Daniel Berrigan. The longtime activist for peace and social justice passed away earlier this year. Coming up, the co-founder of Peace House in Kalamazoo, Jerry Berrigan, remembers his uncle, father, and others in the anti-war movement. But first,
we need many things to keep and maintain the world as a better place. But nothing else will matter if we fail to protect the ocean. Our fate and the ocean are one.
In Sylvia Earle's TED Talk that won her the 2009 TED Prize, she called for action to save the living ocean while there is still time. Sylvia Earle will speak on Thursday, October 6th, at Chenery Auditorium in Kalamazoo. Her address, called Exploring the Deep Frontier, is part of the Science and the Human Endeavor series, sponsored by Western Michigan University's Center for the Humanities and Lee Honors College. Sylvia Earle, thank you very much for speaking with us.
It's great to be on board.
Explain, first of all, where your love of the ocean came from.
Very naturally, I suppose. My parents took summer vacations on the New Jersey shore. I got knocked over by a wave when I was 3 years old. The ocean literally got my attention. But what has held my attention ever since is life in the ocean. There were great craggy horseshoe crabs that would come ashore. And even at that young age, I was fascinated by them and by everything else that that moves, I suppose. I think most children are, but I was really lucky to have parents who encouraged my curiosity in critters.
Has technology made it easier to see what's happening on the ocean floor? I mean, are there things that that are possible now that perhaps early in your career, the technology just wasn't there?
Absolutely. Technology is the key, not only to exploring the skies above and seeing Earth from afar, but also diving in and seeing the blue part of the planet from the inside out. It's ironic, though, that we have sent humans far into space and have repeatedly out into Earth orbit, but only three people have been 7 miles down in the ocean. Now, 7 miles is a long way if you're holding your breath. It's not so far if you're going sideways or up in the sky, because children, everyone, anybody who flies an airplane is likely to go as much as 7 miles above. Certainly the long-distance flights take you that high in the sky. And people do it, eating lunch, watching movies, taking naps, underwater. The first descent was in 1960 by two people in a device called the bathyscaphe. And more recently, 2012, when James Cameron, best known, I suppose, for his filmmaking, Avatar, Titanic, and many others, is also an explorer. He's one of those kids who kept that curiosity and still has it all his life, always asking questions, always wondering about the next thing. And he's a great storyteller, but he's also very good at finding the truth and then build stories that can tell the truth about what's happening. But curious, isn't it, that only three people have been 7 miles down. Millions have traveled 7 miles up. The technology, we have the technology. What's I think baffling is that we have been slow to apply the technologies that would enable us to really explore the ocean.
And you have warned us in the past that the oceans are in fact dying. How close to death are the Earth's oceans as we speak?
Well, it is an exaggeration to say dying, that they are in trouble, that I think microbes are likely to survive one way or the other far into the future with us or without us. But to have a healthy, vibrant, productive ocean that shapes our life support system to hold the planet steady in ways that favor us, that's what is now in decline. And part of maybe the major concern is what we are putting into the ocean, the toxins that are new to the ocean and all of the history of the world. We've manufactured chemicals that don't exist in nature, and they wind up in the ocean one way or the other. What we put into the atmosphere goes back into the sea, and certainly the carbon dioxide that we are really putting into the atmosphere by burning fossil fuels, releasing methane as well, greenhouse gases that are warming the planet, and carbon dioxide that's going into the ocean. It's able to absorb an enormous amount of the excess CO2 in the atmosphere, but too much of a good thing. We need some carbon dioxide to drive photosynthesis, but we have put so much into the atmosphere, and what has gone into the ocean is causing the ocean to become more acid, acidifying the ocean, changing the chemistry of the ocean. There are some microbes that will think that's just fine, but those that are currently dominating the planet and generating the oxygen, taking up the carbon dioxide, creating the world that really is in our favor, they may or may not be favored by this changing chemistry. And it's certain that some of them are not favored because acidifying the ocean damages the calcium carbonate shells of some of the principal photosynthesizers, little tiny organisms called coccolithophorids, and right up the food chain, oysters and clams. It's just changing the chemistry of the ocean, changes everything. So the ocean not dying, the ocean is changing in ways not favorable to the world as we not only know it, but as we need it. We've taken things out of the ocean that also are dramatically changing the nature of the ocean. We've targeted top predators many years ago, centuries ago, taking the large fish, taking whales, taking the creatures that we use for food and for oil and for products of various sorts, but nothing has really been come close to the extraction of wildlife from the sea that really started in the middle of the 20th century, because that's when we began to use techniques that were primarily developed for combat, for war, sonar, the new materials, the plastics that are now used, lightweight, enduring materials that are used in nets, and so many things that have tipped the scales in favor of those who are extracting from the ocean. And I'm not talking just oil and gas and minerals, although that's another way that we're changing the nature of the ocean.
You mean also fishing?
But the wildlife, yes, more than 100 million tons. It's closer now. The estimates are 140 million tons, because much of what has been taken in recent decades has not been reported. It's either illegal or unreported. And new estimates suggest that there's a lot more coming out.
Now, you, of course, have seen a lot of things under the surface of the ocean that many of us don't see. Do you worry sometimes that the changes that you've witnessed are just not visible to the general public, and therefore that's part of the reason it isn't big on the radar of the average person, or maybe even the policymaker who might have a little more say over this?
There's been recent change, an uptick, an upswing, I think you could say, in terms of awareness of why the ocean matters and why the damage that we're doing has consequences that we had not taken note of, in part because from the surface, the ocean looks pretty much the same today as it did, likely did 10,000 years ago. But by not only having millions of divers into the ocean and scientific expeditions around the world that are measuring the nature of the changes, defining what our life. I mean, if you like to breathe, to listen up, because that's pretty fundamental, that the ocean shapes our life support system. And whatever you do, wherever on the planet you live, if you've never seen the ocean, if you've never touched the ocean touches you, literally, with every breath you take, every drop of water that you drink, because the ocean is where most of the water is, and because water over the ages cycles up into the sky, falls back on the land, trickles eventually back into the ocean. It's the ocean that makes our lives possible. And an ocean in decline affects everything. It's not just, oh, I'm not going to be able to eat swordfish anymore because their numbers are diminishing, or tuna, oh, their numbers are down by close to 95%, maybe more in some places. And cod, that used to be the cornerstone of the economy of nations around the North Atlantic for 500 years, they're essentially disappearing. I mean, they are in such low numbers, it's a wonder that people can find any to take at this point in time. But we are still taking them. We are still extracting tuna. We are still taking sharks out of the ocean. Although we know that 90% of the sharks now, the big ones at least, have been extracted, some species down by 99%. And the awareness that there are consequences to that is beginning to become publicly made known.
If we're going to stop and hopefully reverse the decline of the oceans, what do we actually have to do?
Well, we certainly have to look at what we're taking out of the ocean and change the policies. If we don't, the projections are that by the middle of this century, that's like 15 years or so from now, 20 years from now, there won't be commercial fishing because there really won't be enough fish left to support it. So look at what you are consuming, you, the consumer. What we take from the ocean, after all, is like bushmeat in Africa. It's wildlife, and some species are as endangered as the lions and tigers and elephants in terms of being right on the edge of either they'll be here in the next half century, or we will, through our inaction, our continued taking of them for a luxury taste or for products, we'll lose the chance to save them. So individual choices. Be careful what you do with plastics. Plastics of themselves are not dangerous. They're just things. But buying and using single-use plastics, that's a personal choice that you can make and say, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to be conscious that one-time-use plastic is really an excessive habit. And we need to turn things around. Be conscious. Be mindful of the impact each and every one of us is having with the choices that we're making, and to be supportive of things such as the laws that protect water, that protect air, that protect wildlife, to support the establishment of parks on the land that protect our life support system, and certainly this relatively new concept of protecting the ocean. The voice of individuals, individually and together, are really what make whatever civilization is, but that's how it happens. Individuals do something, and it takes every one of us to make those positive choices, knowing that if we don't, who will? And if we don't do it now, when will people be motivated to take those decisions? Make the world a better place.
Sylvia Earle, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me on board.
Oceanographer, explorer, and author Sylvia Earle will speak on Thursday, October 6th at Chenery Auditorium in Kalamazoo. Her address, called Exploring the Deep Frontier, is part of the Science and the Human Endeavor series, sponsored by Western Michigan University's Center for the Humanities and Lee Honors College. A link with more details can be found at WMUK.org.